14. After Mooney had thrown up onto the gravel behind the tailpipe, after he'd hacked and spit and blown his nose till it was raw inside, after he'd used the dirty beach towel from the back seat to clean every speck of cat gut off his face, he was able to think straight. Sort of. He couldn't get a handle on the whole thing because it was ungraspable, but he'd at least managed to calm his breathing and get his heart rate down to almost normal levels, and to stop squealing, "God, Jesus, oh Jesus, God, what the fuck," or close variations thereof, every few seconds. As soon as he was clean, a powerful thirst overtook him, and he was relieved to see the lone remaining wine cooler was still mostly full, the cap only loosened in the moment before he hit the deer. He picked it up out of the exotic berry puddle it had made on the passenger side floor mat and finished it in one long gulp. It was warm now, which made the liquor feel stronger, and stronger was what he needed. A little courage washed through his brain, a familiar feeling, but different too. He could feel himself becoming stronger, calmer, better. He was also becoming a walking dispersal mechanism for Cordyceps novus. Mooney was the 28th human being to be infected by the fungus, but there was an important difference between him and the others. Bartles and James, like many wine coolers and wine products in general, uses the maximum amount of sulfur dioxide permitted by FDA regulations as a preservative. SO2 is one of the most effective antimicrobials on the planet, and is highly antagonistic to growth. In its gaseous form, SO2 can be lethal to any air-breathing creature, and is in fact the leading cause of death in a volcanic eruption. It's the poison gas that gets you, not the lava. But in liquid form, and in the right concentration, SO2 can be quite helpful. It not only prevents invasive microbial growth in human digestive systems, but it can actually clean and preserve a glass wine container itself during both the fermentation and the storage process. Mooney's last bottle of exotic berry, aside from being tasty and intoxicating, was also a superb growth inhibitor. Whereas the fungus's takeover of its previous human victims had been a blitzkrieg, in Mooney's wine cooler besotted state, it was more of a slow and steady infantry assault through mud. The invading army of Cordyceps novus was going to win. Mooney was going to lose. But it would take a while. Having unwittingly bought himself a few extra hours on the planet, he stood back from the car to review the events of the previous couple of hours. There was a lot to review. The deer had been dead. There was no question about it. Same for Mr. Scroggins. The cat was missing half a face and skull. The notion of him surviving that kind of mutilation was laughable. That could only mean that something otherworldly was going on, something unholy. Whatever, the universe was a fucked up place with lots of shit he'd never understand. But what about me? Specifically me, Mooney, where do I stand in all this? What do I really do after all? Mooney had an analytical mind, sometimes, so he put it to use. What's the worst that can happen to me? Yes, I hit a deer. Yes, I pumped it full of lead. And yes, I killed a sick cat, but none of these were crimes. Burying them on somebody else's privately owned land probably was, but he hadn't done that. He hadn't had a chance. The dead deer had run away, and the half-cat climbed a tree and exploded. It's as simple as that, officer. So fear of police could be dismissed. He'd done nothing illegal. That left only fear of societal condemnation and fear of God. Well, the only way society was going to condemn him was if it knew he was a weirdo and an animal killer, and there was no evidence of that other than whatever was left in the trunk. He edged over to the car, the first time he'd come within 6 feet of it since its occupants decamped. There were no guts in the empty trunk, that was good, but the deer had bled a fair amount. It had also left some weird green-brown ooze that covered half the floor of the trunk. Must be the shit that comes out of you when you die or something. Whatever, this could all be cleaned up. This was totally doable. This was a garden hose, a couple of old towels, and maybe 20 minutes of his time. Nobody would ever know. So fear of societal condemnation was off the list, too. Unfortunately, that left the biggie. God knew. God knew all this shit, and he could not possibly be pleased. It wasn't that Mooney feared for his soul. His personal concept of God was a bit more Baroque, more Old Testament. He'd seen enough of life to know that God was big into retribution, and the sicker and more ironic, the better. Yes, he was kind and loving, but he also invented colorectal cancer. And is there a supervillain anywhere ever who came up with a more diabolical way to take somebody out than that? Don't bother checking, there isn't. Yes, God had most certainly taken note of what Mooney had done tonight, disapproved, and started unleashing his righteous fury. Bringing the innocent creatures back to life to torture him had been step one, spattering his face with offal was step two, and Mooney knew for certain he didn't want to wait for steps 3, 4, and 5, whatever they might be. He needed to apologize. The last time he'd decided he owed God a mea culpa, it had cost him almost 4 years of his life. But he was hoping he could wrap this one up in a couple hours on his knees. St. Benedict's Abbey on 2nd Street was open all night, and he'd used it before when he needed to atone. The place was run by actual monks, a Franciscan order, and the black-cowled robes conveyed a judgmental asceticism that felt pretty legit. The modish wooden pews couldn't have been Vatican-approved, but there was a granite slab that ran the length of the floor in front of the altar, and Mooney had spent many hours on his knees there, praying for divine forgiveness of one sort or another. The stone was pockmarked and uneven, so after the first 5 minutes his knees would start to ache, and by the time a full hour had passed he would be in so much pain he couldn't focus. When his transgression was bad enough, Mooney would stay so long that the skin would grind into the inside of his pants, and when he stood, whole layers of flesh would tear away. By the time he got in the car, the blood would be seeping through the knees of his pants, and that was the sign that he'd done things right, and they were square. Of course, there was the time no amount of penance at the Abbey was enough. To all of those prayers, God's answer had been a consistent, fuck no. Half an hour on his knees to ask for the strength to resist her? Nope. A full hour on his knees to ask for forgiveness after he fucked her, and more important, might I please just this one time have a pass on consequences? Could she please not be pregnant? Nope. Another 2 hours to ask God to guide her with his wisdom and judgment and convince her to marry him? Forget it, asshole. And finally, he'd spent 3 days on his knees, coupled with fasting so severe that he'd fainted. He fainted so many times that Brother Dennis had asked him to either stop coming or at least use a kneeler. But the object of those prayers was vehemently denied as well. The baby did not die in utero. The baby was not stillborn. The baby was healthy and was his daughter, his bastard daughter with Naomi Williams. Though the entire rest of the Snyder family had forgiven him, it was abundantly clear that God in heaven had not and did not intend to do so for a good long while. Mike, he was still Mike back then, came across Luke 12:48 the day after she'd brought the baby home from the hospital. But the one who does not know and does things deserving punishment will be beaten with few blows. From everyone who has been given much, much will be demanded. And from the one who has been entrusted with much, much more will be asked. Clearly, God was not screwing around this time. He was demanding an Isaac-in-the-desert-type sacrifice, and Mike Snyder just had to figure out what it was. The advantages of joining the Peace Corps were numerous. Escape. The chance to serve his fellow man. Escape. A settling of accounts with the Lord. And, oh yeah, escape. Sadly, they rejected him. Turns out the Peace Corps looks for college graduates with decent resumes and real skills. You know, people who actually have something to offer. Who knew? Service Brigade, Inc., however, would take just about anybody, provided you were not currently under indictment in your country of origin. The brigade had a contract with the Ugandan government to build affordable housing for a modest fee, which in local terms meant a fee that was highly inflated and heavily kicked back to the government officials who distributed it. Whatever, Mike was out of a bad situation at home, Service Brigade was willing to pay him a decent amount under the table, and his family thought he was a saint, so he took it. Within a few weeks of his arrival in Uganda, the local workers he was teamed with started calling him Muni, short for Muni Yaga. He liked the sound of it, so even after he found out that Muni Yaga means one who bothers other people in some goddamn African language or another, he stayed with his new name. He was Muni. It was a fresh start. He'd returned home to Atchison just a few months ago, was given a hero's welcome and drawn into the uncomfortably tight embrace of his family once again. He'd regretted coming back almost the minute he got there. As soon as he felt their brimming eyes on him, judging the living shit out of him, telling him they forgave him for everything, for his weakness, for his cowardice, for what had turned out to be his complete lack of artistic ability. They'd tried to get him to take an interest in his daughter, to at least go see Sarah, but that wasn't going to happen. Her mother, sure, that'd be hot, but not the kid, never the kid. But Naomi wouldn't see him at all. 3 days after coming home, Mike had started planning how to get out again. Maybe he'd meet his buddy Daniel Mafabi back in Butadiri, where Mafabi had worked out a sweet deal with the Ministry of Works and Transport to build schools all across the country at double cost. There were a lot of Ugandan shillings sloshing around the budget since Nakadama took office, and Mike knew the people who knew the people. Another couple of years over there and he'd be sitting on enough cash to split on his family for good, to never ever have to hear that they'd forgiven him again. But God was another matter. Those eyes followed him wherever he went. So tonight he needed to get his ass to St. Benedict's, make his apologies, and call this awful night to an end. He got in the car, turned the key, and it clicked. Of course. He tried again. Not even a grind, just a click. Dead starter. He got out of the car and slammed the door as hard as he could. It bounced open, so he slammed it even harder, then kicked it square in the middle, leaving a good-sized dent. One more thing for the insurance report. He looked around, assessing the middle-of-nowhereness of it all. The car at the bottom of the hill caught his eye again. It was parked near the entrance to the storage place, just under a mercury vapor light that lit up the parking lot. In the yellowy haze of the light, he could see the rear end of the car, a 10-year-old Toyota Celica. It rang a distant bell somewhere in his mind. He started walking down the driveway toward the car, and as he got closer, he saw a sticker on the back left bumper. Closer still, and he could make out what it said. Proud parent of an AHS honor roll student, 2012. Unbelievable. He knew that car. It was Naomi's parents' car. Or it used to be. It was probably hers now. He'd had some good times in that car. He started to smile and walk faster, drawn to the car as if by the ghosts of makeouts past. He'd heard she was going to school and working nights someplace. Evidently she was here, right here where he needed her, when he needed her. And if that wasn't Providence speaking to him, what was? Mike took a deep breath of the moist night air, feeling better now, definitely better, thinking more clearly. Go inside and find Naomi, that's what I'll do, find Naomi, find Naomi. Growing more comfortable in his body and mind, improving by the minute. He walked faster, stretching out his neck. Everything was going to be okay. Naomi would be so happy to see him. Things were clarifying.